Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
There you go. Saints winning their fourth in a row, 6-14 on this Monday morning, December 29th. Mike Dettelier joins us, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. Long day for him. He'll be second-guessing over at the Silver Slipper on the beach in Hancock County, Mississippi. Boy, talk about a great time of year to go. You might have some time off, and you always want to go to the – you all right, Mike?
Yeah, I'm always all right.
All right. A great time of year to go to Silver Slipper because maybe you're off of work and you always wanted to go out there and see them. Well, today's your day, man. Go out there and hang with them. So let's talk about these Saints, man. Thoughts?
Well, again, you looking at another chapter in that Tyler Shuck book, and he's starting to pile them up now. And my feelings about quarterbacks is – you got something when he's able to elevate other players on your team. Look the consistency level that you see upgraded and watching Chris Olave, Juwan Johnson, their work with Tyler Shuck.
Juwan Johnson, he wants to play football.
Yeah, and again, so you see it, Kevin Austin. It's a guy that the Saints have cut loose a couple times. Mm-hmm. He was in the UFL. And, again, it's that connection on the field. My confidence in you, my connection with you, you're going to get me the football and put me in a spot to make a play. Okay, that's when you know you got something. You see it with Shuck. And, okay, you got a depleted – running back core, your receivers, you down a guys here and there at your offensive line, especially in the interior. It's not real good of what you're playing right now, and yet still making it work. Tommy, that isn't that's what you wanted? Didn't we see that for so many years with Drew Brees? He was able to elevate everybody around him, and that's what you kind of seeing the first – glimpses of with Tyler Shuck, how he's been able to do it each and every game. And the MO of this team is they don't start off well, and so you might not like that first quarter or second quarter, but boy, they piece it together in the second half of games. And their defense
Me, Mike, is more important. I know you want to start early and you don't want to dig yourself a hole, But if I'm going to – man, fighting back, coming back, that to me says everything, especially on the road. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and again, it's a part of confidence. Okay, I got confidence, and we've done it before. We're going to do it again. That there is something to that. And I think you sort of seeing it now, 4 weeks in a row, how they've been able to piece it all together. And, you know, you think about – we always talk about a running game, and that's always the best friend of a quarterback, a running game. Okay, you down to Audric Estime. It was the guy
who
was.
Let me jump in for a second, if I may, there. Audric Estime, when you say down to Audric Estime, this guy has shown me more other than AK than any other Saints running back this season. Thoughts?
Well, before Neil got hurt, I really liked him. Mm-hmm. I really did. Estime, okay.
Runs hard.
One thing with him, you go back through his time frame and what he did at Notre Dame, and he was a pick with the Broncos with Sean Payton, and they had a bucket load of running back. Excuse me. They had a bucket load of running backs. And he got cut loose, and then he ends up with the Eagles, and then he ends up here. And I've been hearing from people involved, hey, he's a guy they really liked. But you got to have some trust in him.
Mm-hmm.
I think yesterday, okay, he built that trust up with the coaching staff that, hey, you give me the rock and I can get it done. And you saw it yesterday with him. And he's a shortcut 5'11" back, 210.
But he runs bigger than that.
But he runs hard with the football, but what you see with him is good field vision.
Mm-hmm.
And that the run for the touchdown showed it. Okay, he runs right into the pile. Okay, they jammed it up inside with Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons. And he kind of runs into it, and he slides off, and he cuts to the edge, and he's able to get in. And so, again, you got something there. Not Estime is a guy that you say, hey, he probably not going to be my number one back, but he's a guy that can help you.
Be hard to cut him.
And in this situation, you know, the list of backs is real short, and he's getting it done for you in that spot. So, and again, you look at all the offensive line changes that they've had, especially inside at the center and the two guards, and still, you know, you were able to grind it out yesterday. You know, 23 rushes for 103 yards, but he averaged 6.7 yards a carry. That is impressive against a team that's known for their ability to stop the run. Now, they were vulnerable in the secondary, and Shuck took care of that. And, you know, he threw a couple deep passes that didn't connect. But when you 22 of 27 in the NFL, that's really impressive.
Mike,
throwing
I got
the football.
To tell you. You know, I don't want to get all crazy or anything out here, and I don't want anybody to hear this and go nuts or anything. But, man, you know, I watched the Bills game after, and although it, you know, you can talk about two-point conversion, all that stuff, man, it just seems like you got, with Tyler Shuck, you got a guy along the lines of Josh Allen, at least in terms of body size and frame, right?
He reminds me physically so much of Drake May with the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
There's similarities when you look at size, ability to get the ball out quick, his quick processing of information of where to go with the football downfield. Josh is sort of a freak of nature because he's built like a lumberjack. I mean, he's 6'5" plus 250 pounds. And, man, he can run. But, you know, you look at Shuck and people ask, who do you compare him to? It's the guy the year before. It's Drake May. And who I compared Drake May to when he came out was Andrew Luck when he was with the Colts. There's some similarities if you kind of lined up the three. They all sort of built the same way. All have similarities the way they can throw the football, and it's the quick processing of information that, to me, that's what stands out about Shuck. For a young player in this league, that how quickly it is processed for him, because it's not that easy. You see the talent in Cam Ward. He's immensely gifted for the Titans. Now, he makes a lot of plays. He's sort of the new age version of Fran Tarkenton. He's not a runner, but he drives you nuts because he runs all over the field, and you got to chase him, and he comes up with a play improvisational. I mean, somehow, some way, he gets the ball downfield and makes a big play with it. But, man, Tyler Shuck, his arm and his processing – of information of where to go to at the right time, right place, right time. It is remarkable to see for a rookie quarterback.
We got us a quarterback. That's
got us
how
a quarterback.
I feel about it. We got us a quarterback, man, and the rest of it is going to come into place. I'm telling you, I feel good. 6:23 more when we come back. Traffic now, WWL. 6:28, Tommy Tucker, WWL. The time is set for the game Sunday noon against the Falcons. Mike Dettelier, our guest, WWE. You know who Mike Dettelier is. Mike, I was saying before we got us a quarterback, I don't even know why the Saints would address a quarterback in a draft other than if you're looking for some kind of backup with a later round pick. Thoughts?
Yeah, I would think you're absolutely right on that. You pass on that. You got other areas to be much more concerned about. You got your quarterback now. For now and for the future, the one thing with the young quarterback, and you hear it in their voice all the time, is about, you know, staying away from the critical mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
How many interceptions has Tyler Shuck thrown the last 3 weeks?
None.
Zero. 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Zero interceptions. And that's the tough part, because I think normally when you watch the progression of a young quarterback, you see the skill set, you see the arm talent, you see accuracy, but it's always the turnovers that catch you. But 3 straight weeks he has not thrown an interception, and that to me tells me the bigger story here of how well he can process that information, how well he can throw the football downfield. You got something. Now, in the offseason, yes, through free agency, go grab you a couple of veteran offensive guards.
Mm-hmm.
This draft stuff with linemen, you've done that. Go find you a couple of veteran offensive guards and then kind of build around him, wide receiver, running back, tight end, and yeah, let's see what happens, because the gap between the best and the worst team in the NFC South is not much.
Nope.
Not much at all.
And for people,
and if you hit right, hey, you right back in the hunt.
And for people that are saying, you know, Tyler Shuck earlier in the season, I don't think he was ready earlier in the season, do you?
Well, if he'd have been ready, they'd have played him.
Yeah.
Don't the coaches know a lot more about him than and I hear it too. If they'd have started him early, okay, if the coaches, they hard to win games, right? They're not hard to lose games. They hard to win games. Also, too, kind of gets lost in all this of you see the maturing of Kellen Moore as a head coach.
I was going to get to that when we come back. So we'll talk about that and more with Mike Dettelier when we return, the development of Kellen Moore, which I think has been outstanding. And we'll talk about it when we return. 6:31 time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Mike Haas with the call. Deuce McAllister yesterday doing a great job as well. And Jeff Nowak on the sideline. You got one more chance to turn down the sound. It is a New Orleans tradition, as Deuce always says. Turn down that sound on the TV and turn up Saints Radio. Mike Dettelier, talk about the development of Kellen Moore, if you will. Because, you know, people think just because you get the job that you automatically are an expert at it and you know how to do it, especially when it's your first head coaching job, and that ain't necessarily the case.
It's never the case, okay? You've never been a head coach, and the buck stops with you, and you got 53 different personalities in that locker room. Think about this.
Retiring type either, right?
Yeah. On November 30th, this team had lost back-to-back games to the Falcons and to the Dolphins with Tyler Shuck at quarterback. They were 2-10. And you see the maturing, the developing as a head coach of Kellen Moore. You always going to be criticized if you're a play caller. That's just part of the gig, that you're going to be criticized no matter what you call. But you see that he was able to hold that locker room together. When you're 2-10, everywhere I went, or callers or texters, whatever, it was, man, who are we going to pick in the draft? You know, are we going to trade that first overall pick and maybe get extra picks? And I never forget Sean Payton talking about his first year, and it was sort of a magical run. They were 10-6 that year. They were one game away from going to the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And him talking about, hey, I had to go through all that. And it was year one for me I'd never been in that spot before. And how do you handle different situations? Until you've been in them moccasins, man, you don't realize what you're handling. Now, once you get a little experience, then you can kind of draw back on that. But it is tough in year one when you've never been a head coach before. And I think it's a big reason maybe why you try to bring in guys that have been there before, like a Brandon Staley, who is your defensive coordinator. And Staley was a head coach before in the National Football League. And you sort of go off of what he's telling you in certain spots worked and didn't work for him when he was with the Chargers. So I think you've seen not only the development and the maturity of Tyler Shuck, you're seeing the development and maturity of Kellen Moore as a head coach right before your very eyes, because on December 1st, you were a 2-10 team and to reel off four straight wins. Impressive.
Very impressive. We got us a quarterback. I think we got us a kicker. Agree?
Yeah, I mean, he's always going to be one of those guys that, okay, he hits the deep ones and he misses the 40-yarder. That's not a surprise. You know why? We've seen that in practice. That's just the way he is. And, Tommy, the two deep ones that he hits, when it came off his leg, did you think that was going in? That ball looked like it was sailing, and then it circled right back in.
A high draw.
Yeah, and it was sort of windy a little bit in Nashville yesterday. But when he hit the two deep ones, the 56 and 57-yarder, as soon as it came off his leg, it looked as though it was going to hook wide, and it hooked right back in. There was never been a question about Charlie Smith's leg strength. And, man, he's got some physics and some size behind him when he pops it. But also, too, every once in a while, he's going to miss that 40-something yarder. And why is over the last 2 years when he's been at practice, we've seen that. But, man, he's a talented kicker.
To have a guy that occasionally missed the 40-yarder in exchange for a guy that can bomb it from 70 if you need it, you know, as a Hail Mary, I'll take that. I'll take it.
The one thing with Charlie, too, I think as a young guy and not being heavily involved in football before, I think sometimes he doesn't overthink it. That's the one thing with him. You can tell by just talking to him. We've had a couple opportunities. You know, he doesn't overthink things. Hey, you know, my job's to go out and kick it. And a lot of times, you know, it's like talking to a guy who's been a really good golfer and he gets on a roll. Okay, he's not talking about, you know, my thought process is this and that. All he's talking about is, you know, here I'm going to try to hit it from this spot and that spot. And, hey, I got confidence I can make the shot. And it's the same thing with Charlie Smith, the exact same thing.
When you see that ball on the other team, on a logo in the middle of the field, and you know you got a shot, I'll take it. We'll take a break, pick it up. We come back, Mike Dettelier, our guest. We'll look at the NFL and the playoff situation and so forth and more when we come back. 6:52 now, 8 till 7, traffic, WWL. All right, 6:57, 3 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Mike, after the game, went to hit some golf balls. Nice high draws. But anyway, and I was talking to somebody about the Saints game, and I said, what do you think about the young secondary? He said, I don't know about all that. But it's a tough position to play. I don't think they're playing badly. Thoughts on the secondary?
Cam Ward had a pretty good game yesterday, and that was their game plan going in. They were going to attack the Saints secondary. Now, you know, when you have someone that can maneuver around the pocket like Ward, he can buy you a little bit of time. And the Saints got to him yesterday. Chase Young, we didn't talk about Chase. I thought Chase Young had a fantastic game
and
again. He sort of pressed the pocket.
Don't you think very disciplined, the front line, when it comes to pass rushing and maintaining
lanes?
Yeah, and
also, too, how they used Alante Taylor yesterday. Because I thought Alante really had a good game.
Yes,
but,
he did.
Again, with the secondary, with young pieces, that's where they're going to go after. Okay, if you're an opposing team, I'm going after. You got a rookie safety. You got a rookie cornerback. That's where I'm going toward. Kool-Aid McKinstry's in year two. I'm going toward them. And Cam had his moments, and they got beat deep a couple times when they didn't get to Ward and affect his throw. And also, too, with Cam, he makes plays improvisational. That is really something. Because he's running around back there, and he sort of wears you down. But, nothing helps the secondary more than having a consistent pass rush. And that's an area, too, in the offseason. Like to see them upgrade and get another guy that you could play opposite Cam. The other thing, too, is just think, we have come down to week 17, and it comes down to a winner-take-all match between Carolina and Tampa Bay for the NFC South. Panthers are 8-8, Bucks are 7-9. Look the gap between that and the Saints, who are 6-10.
Got to be optimistic about next year. I'm telling you, I am, man. I really am. I'm pumped. Bobby and Mike will be second-guessing live on location, Silver Slipper Casino, this evening. I'll tell you more about it as the morning progresses. Starts at 4, holiday week. Good chance to get out there and say hi. Right, Mike? Y'all are friendly. Listener-friendly.
Yeah, we good. We'll be there till 6:30, and then it'll be the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show with Kellen Moore, Mike Haas, Kyle Wilbur, the Saints Assistant Special Teams Coach. So, yeah,
pleasure
we'll be there
as always.
Till 7:30.
Happy New Year, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, well, it is windy as all get out right now, and that's as the front comes through. Right now, it's 53 degrees, feels like 41 with the wind. We have already reached our high temperature today, so temps will be falling throughout the day to eventually about 49 degrees, maybe 50, 49 degrees by sunset. Then tomorrow, highs of only 51 after a chilly start. Likewise for New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve, New Year's Night, when you're either going out around maybe the fleur-de-lis drop or maybe shooting your own fireworks, whatever. It's going to be chilly, then highs on New Year's Day of 66, 73 on Friday, 72 on the weekend, 50% chance for showers then, and then it cools off a little bit by the first week of January. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. How you doing, Jeff?
I am doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I was watching the game, and the most interesting part of the game on Saturday night to me was when Trinidad Chambliss's name came up with Lane Kiffin. If he had had...
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. One of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop, assemble, and bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
If he had been drinking a beverage, it would have been a great time for a spit take. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like, so Lane, when it comes to Trinidad, what? I can't talk about that. What are you? That was interesting, wasn't it?
It is, and there is a lot of uncertainty here involving Trinidad Chambliss, whether he's able to get an extra year of eligibility. Now, before he went to Ole Miss, he was at Ferris State. So that's Division II, that's NCAA. He only played two games, what would have been his I guess, as it's right now referred to as his redshirt freshman season. And he's trying to say that because he had tonsillitis during that season, that what prevented him from playing more games. But apparently Ferris State is not really going along with that explanation. And he's kind of they were expecting Tom Mars is his attorney, who's you know, the guy to have when you're dealing with eligibility issues and you're a college athlete. But so far they have not been able to get that waiver from the NCAA. So when the transfer portal opens up on January 2nd, unless there is some sort of ruling that comes down here between now and New Year's Day, which is possible, but if there's not, I mean, I think Lane Kiffin and Billy Glasscock, the general manager for the LSU Tigers now, I think those guys are going to have to make a decision on a couple of other guys and go in that direction. I don't know if they can necessarily wait here on whether Trinidad's going to get that extra year of eligibility or not.
Is he going to play on Sunday?
He will play in the bowl game, yes.
No,
he,
I mean in the NFL I'm talking about.
Oh, on Sundays. Well, you know, that's a good question. He's I think one thing he would love to have is another year of development on the college level. You know, he performed well in Division II, but this was his first taste of playing in the, you know, FBS. And if you think about it, too, he wasn't even the starting quarterback in preseason camp for Ole Miss. So he, even during that time, he was taking a lot of the second string snaps, wasn't really working with the first team. Austin Simmons was the starting quarterback at the beginning of the year for the Rebels. So he was someone that wasn't even the main guy in preseason camp for Ole Miss. So I think he looks at it as he really could use another year of college football, whether that's at LSU, Ole Miss, somewhere else, whatever he decides to do. But he's still waiting on getting that extra year of eligibility. If not, then he's going to have to quickly pivot and get himself ready for the NFL draft.
And LSU is bound by, I guess, commitment of name, image, and likeness money. You got to know how much you or how much you have to spend before you decide whether to go after him or not, right? Because,
well, I mean, there's a lot of big time quarterbacks that's in this, you know, transfer portal. Sam Leavitt is one of those guys. Dylan Raiola, who's from Nebraska. I put it in my latest, you know, article at WWL.com, the figure that Stuart Mandel from The Athletic published, I think it was late last week, that, you know, to go out and get a starting quarterback, it's going to take about $4 to $6 million. So, you know, they have that money already allocated, whether that's going to be for Trinidad Chambliss or another one of these other guys that have entered a transfer portal. They're certainly going to go after it. And, you know, Michael Van Buren is an option as well. Does, you know, I don't, it's hard to say, but, you know, does Lane and this coaching staff think that he's the answer? You know, he was talking about during that same interview that you were alluding to at the beginning of this interview about how he was, you know, having a conversation with Charlie Weiss, the offensive coordinator, about transfer quarterbacks. So I think they're looking, well, they got to get more because at this point, Van Buren is the only scholarship quarterback player on the roster, and they don't have an incoming player as incoming quarterback coming in from the high school ranks. So they're going to have to go in the transfer portal and get at least a couple of guys to give you a little bit of depth at that position.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, about the LSU Tigers' weird bowl game, because although it was an entertaining game, LSU lost, but really, with the opt-outs, with Frank Wilson, who's leaving to go to Ole Miss, it was just a weird kind of deal. 7:21 traffic now, WWL. 7:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking Jeff Palermo, WWL.com, columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. So the Lane Kiffin era officially begins. How much of a surprise was it that Frank Wilson is going to Ole Miss?
Well, you know, when you have a coaching change, you never know what's going to happen, Tommy. I mean, it's tough to say, you know, and the two have worked together before. So you were thinking maybe there might be a chance. But the other thing about it is that Lane has something going on here with as far as there's a good relationship with all of his offensive coaches. I think he really believes in his running backs coach that he's bringing with him to Ole Miss. So when you heard that, once they announced, or once it seemed like Lane Kiffin was in fact going to be the next head coach of LSU, and you heard that he was going to bring most, if not all, of his offensive coaches with him, you were wondering, well, what does that mean for Frank Wilson? Frank Wilson's a guy that wants to still be, you know, coaching on the field. He could have maybe become an analyst or maybe a personnel guy, but he feels like he wants to be there with the as the running backs coach. And there just really wasn't a spot for him. I think they did look at – well, I think they both mentioned they looked at different options for those two guys as far as trying to figure out where maybe there could be a spot for Frank Wilson. Maybe, I don't know, maybe make him a special teams coordinator or something like that. But it just didn't work out. So
any take –
move on, and who knows? Maybe there might be a day down the road where Frank's back at LSU.
Any takeaways from the game on Saturday night that really have anything to do with next year?
Well, I think to me, and I talked about it in my preview piece going into the game, you know, there were some guys on defense that you were, you know, hoping to, you know, really see play well. You know, Tylan Singleton, Devon Keys, you know, guys in the secondary, DJ Pickett, who got picked on quite a bit in that game. And I think he'll be better for it actually in the end. But there's all this talk about the offense and getting a quarterback and maybe getting another running back. And obviously they got to rebuild the entire offensive line, it looks like. But there's a lot of work on defense too. There's a ton of work that still needs to be done. I mean, Lane talked about how it was a priority to make sure that Whit Weeks comes back next season. So I'm sure that's one of the things they're going to probably try to secure here, but they're going to need some playmakers on the defensive side of the football. I mean, they went into that game without six starters, and there was an opportunity in that game for some guys to step up, and frankly, you just didn't see it. So a lot of work to go over there. It's just not going to be the offense. So it'll be fascinating to see starting on Friday, Tommy. I mean, who they end up getting out of the transfer portal.
That was my next question.
They've identified several guys at this moment.
That was my next question. Give me the chronology of what we can look for as far as the Lane Kiffin LSU era.
Well, it really begins January 2nd, because that's when Lane can really start to do some really make some moves here, is trying to get this roster to where it can compete to play in the college football playoff next season. I mean, he got into the high school recruiting cycle very, very late there, and to try to shore that up. But I have a feeling this is gonna act a lot like what you see with NBA free agency and the NFL free agency. Even though that portal window opens up on January 2nd, guys are going to be committing to schools right away. Deals are already in place. All these players have agents. Coaches are able to talk with the agents. So you can get a lot of these deals, NIL deals, in place. And then by January 2nd and 3rd, I think you're going to hear a flurry of commitments coming to LSU and obviously other schools as well. But LSU is going to be as aggressive as anyone out there as far as trying to load up on their roster with transfer players.
It's going to be fun. Happy New Year. Thank you, Jeff.
All right, Tommy.
Appreciate
thank
it
you.
As always. You bet. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist. Soon come back. It's going to be Bank On It, financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields, the COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We're going to talk about why what's happening in Japan actually matters for U.S. interest rates. Intrigued? I am. We'll find out. We come back right now. Time for WWL First News. 7:45, quarter till 8, Monday morning, December 29th. That means it's time for Bank On It, financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields, the COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. How you doing, Jason?
Doing good, Tommy. How are you today?
I am all right, sir. I'm intrigued as to why what's happening in Japan actually matters for U.S. interest rates.
Yeah, so I thought for the last show of the year we would do an interesting topic that's actually somewhat important right now because of some things that are happening in Japan, but it's probably something that not a lot of people realize. Mm-hmm. So for years, Japan has had some of the lowest interest rates in the world, almost zero for decades. And at the same time, the U.S. here, we offered higher yields on things like government bonds and things. And so what that did was that actually created a real powerful incentive for global investors, and one that Japan has slowly started to move away from, that ultra low rate world. And that's why it sort of matters with what's going on today. So there's a thing that's called the yen carry trade, talked about in economics. And it's a complicated sounding thing, but the idea behind it's incredibly simple. So if you're an investor, you would borrow that cheap money in Japan in yen, right? And then you would use it to buy higher yielding assets, say U.S. treasuries. And what will happen is the spread on that, you're able to basically make free money because treasuries have low risk, the yen is lower. And as long as you manage that margin and you make sure that you keep up on the currency, it's incredibly low risk earning assets. And what that did, that pumped a whole lot of money into treasury purchases here in the U.S., right? Because people saw that as an easy way to do safe trades that made them a good bit of money. And, you know, as we've talked about in the past, the treasuries are our issuance that allows us to continue to fund here. Mm-hmm. Now, what you could imagine is if Japan was to change their rates and tighten those margins, it could have some impacts on the issuance of those bonds. Are less people buying treasuries? And so why is Japan so low? And Japan's actually fascinating. If anyone's bored over the New Year holiday, go read up on the 1980s Japan crash, because in the 1980s, Japan had one of the biggest asset bubbles in history. And to this day, economists and financial people study it to understand exactly what happened. But basically, their asset bubble in the 80s was one of the biggest we'd ever seen in the world. There's the stat that people like to throw around, economists, that say the land at the peak, the land underneath Tokyo's Imperial Palace, was valued at more than all of the real estate in California combined. So, you know, it doesn't take a genius to realize that that's a little bit out of whack. Mm-hmm. And but that shows you how extreme it was. And when that bubble burst, Japan spent decades at zero interest rates. They actually went negative for a little bit. And while that sounds like a horrible thing, what it did is it allowed investors to inject cash and use it to buy U.S. bonds. And this is something that we've been doing forever. So what does all that mean, right? Right now, Japan recently just raised their rates again to 75%, 75 bips. And what that's done is that's tightened that margin that's out there. Now, it's not a problem, but it is an interesting thing, because now that a couple of things could happen here. The yen could get stronger, the cost of borrowing gets stronger, and all of a sudden, all of that cheap money that we used over the years, big institutional borrowers, I'm not talking about you and me, I'm talking about giant banks that would borrow $100 million at a time to buy treasuries, all of a sudden that trade doesn't make as much sense. And it's not an alarming thing, but it is an intriguing thing from an economic standpoint, because I like to use the example of free shipping, Tommy, right? Like over the holidays, we've all taken it for granted at this point, right? You go to checkout, boom, free shipping, you make the order, no problem. But if you're like me, you go to checkout and all of a sudden you're getting hit with shipping charges, and start to second guess that purchase a little bit, right? Because you're like, okay, well, this doesn't feel as if I'm still getting as good of a deal as I was getting before. And that's what's going to slowly start happening here with the yen carry trade, right? Institutional investors are going to say, okay, this used to really make a whole lot of sense for me. I use this as a method of buying treasuries. And it's not an alarming thing, but it is a trend that we're noticing, that if the lowest rates in the world have decided that they want to start ticking up, it probably means those 0% rate days are probably behind us. And it's a good thing from an economic standpoint, but it's an interesting thing that you have to balance, because what happens in Japan does actually affect here. Because if people stop buying treasuries via this trade, now they'll still buy them. But if demand slows, that'll raise yields. And those raised yields could, because you're going to have to pay more on those treasuries for people to want to buy them, that directly impacts mortgage rates. That directly impacts everything. And so I don't want to be an alarmist here, Tommy. I don't want to make everyone think, oh, God, the mortgage rates are going to go up. You're talking about they raised it by 25 basis points. Not a huge number, but the trend shows us those 0% rates in the 2010s, they're starting to fade away. And so it's It's an interesting thing. I encourage everyone, if they're interested in it, to go look up the yen carry trade, or perhaps go look at the 1980s Japanese crash, because it's interesting. And it shows that I think a lot of the lessons we learned from that crash helped us during COVID, right? What happens in a time where your economy basically screeches to a halt, mm-hmm. and how quickly you react? Japan took a much more longer approach. They took a longer runway in how they handled the 1980s crash. And we saw that it took decades to recover. The U.S. during COVID, we injected money and we told the economy to get going. And you know, look, that's one of those moments where when you get it right, nobody cares. Mm-hmm. But if we would have got it wrong, we could be sitting in a 30-year slump like Japan. So interesting stuff. That was a fun topic that we would go over.
So I'm trying to figure out what was in it for Japan if they had zero interest and people were buying U.S. treasuries. What am I missing here?
Yeah. So look, Japan had the theory has always been, if you bring rates to zero, Tommy, everybody's going to borrow money and they're going to go use it and do stuff. Mm-hmm. But what happened in Japan is their banks had so much bad debt. Their population had hit them so hard. The people of Japan became incredibly debt averse, right? And so, like in America, if I gave you 0% interest rates, free shipping, 2% mortgages, we're going to go out and buy stuff, right? That's what we do. But in Japan, culturally, this hit them so hard, it generationally ruined what people were doing. So Japan just tried everything they could. And what happened was they kept the rates at zero so long, people of Japan kind of normalized it. Mm-hmm. And what happened was that they just had to keep it there because there was literally no more dry powder that they could do anything with. You can make rates go negative, and they did. Mm-hmm. But in essence, they were just kind of held up by foreign people coming and borrowing that money to do stuff. Now, they were still getting paid on that debt. So if you're a bank in Japan, you're still making money on it. But you can't really raise rates. Raising rates destimulates the economy, and they just want to stop spending. And so Japan had to wait for wages and, asset growth to go up before they could start raising rates. They're just starting to see that. So that's, I don't know if that completely explained it for you or not. But
well, no, it does. And when it comes to with our own personal finances, is there anything we can really do as it relates to this?
Yeah, no, everyone asks me, when are we going to get 3% mortgages again, Tommy? I don't see it happening for a while, not the way that things are going. Mortgages are the most popular one that everyone asks about. I always like to say, love the house, live with the rate. You'll eventually get a rate that you like, and you can always refinance out of it. Mm-hmm. But if you're sitting there on the fence and saying, I'm not going to buy a house until I get that 3% mortgage rate, probably not going to happen, right? These things like Japan making these moves and some other things that we're seeing globally, not just locally, are indicating at this point that the 0% interest rate days are gone. And so this is a pretty good normalization of the market, but we'll be steady for a while. And I think that's the important takeaway from this.
Very interesting. Thank you, sir. Interesting and informative as always. Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Bank on it. Financial insights you can count on. 7:54 and a half. Time for traffic.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money?
Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
WWL. If you have not been outside, I ran downstairs during the news to see about the front, and it has definitely come through. It is windy and colder than cold outside. It's 52, but with the wind, it feels like 41. And we have reached our high temperature for today. With the winds, it's going to feel cold all day long. So you heard, I think it was Brooke Laser earlier talking about wear your heavy coat. You're going to need it today because that wind's going to cut right through you. Highs tomorrow of 51 after a chilly start, then a real cold start Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, highs of 57. And then as you go into New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, it's going to be chilly that evening with lows around 39, 44 degrees, somewhere in that area. So leading up to midnight, it's going to be chilly. You have to bundle up, then going up to mid-60s on New Year's Day. Christy Trail joins us, Executive Director of Pontchartrain Conservancy. Good morning, Christy, and Happy New Year. I can tell you early, I guess, right?
Yeah, of course. Good morning, Tommy, and I'm trying to stay warm over here.
I'm telling you, it's chilly. Tell me about Cow Pop, if you will, please.
Sure, Cow Pop. That's an acronym. You want to take a stab at what it stands for?
I would be cheating because I'm looking at it. It's Comprehensive Aquatic Litter Plan for Orleans Parish.
There you go. That's our new grant that we received from the federal government, from NOAA, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. We're super excited to kick it off. And it's all about reducing litter in our waterways.
How do you go about doing, first of all, how much of a problem is litter in the waterways? Because on a day like today, especially, Christy, we're talking about the weather. I really was surprised by the number of plastic bags that I saw blowing around. I shouldn't have been, but it really seemed excessive today. I don't know if it's got anything to do with the holidays or not, but as I was driving in early this morning.
Yeah, that wind can really be a problem. And you may remember a couple years ago, back in 2018, the city did a pretty comprehensive push to clean out a lot of the storm drains and catch basins. They pulled out 72 million pounds of trash from our drainage system, and 93,000 pounds of that was Mardi Gras beads. So that just tells you we've got a problem. We know we do. A lot of it's not intentional. As you mentioned, some of these plastic bags, it's just from the wind. It knocks over garbage cans. Those things are light. They blow around. But nonetheless, when they get in our storm drains and in our waterways, they end up in the lake. They blow out to the Gulf. So it just continues to be a problem, not only for drainage, but also harmful to our marine life. So that's where we really want to try to focus on reducing that.
So how do you go about doing that, Christy, reducing it and keeping it out of the water?
Well, so we've got
the drains, actually, because it gets in the drains and it gets in the water.
Right, right. So we've got a multi-pronged approach that we're going to try to do here. So, I mean, step one is really trying to prevent any litter from happening in the first place. So that's working with community members and schools. We're going to do a big intensive push with some schools and do some education around what litter is, how it happens, how it gets there, and how can we prevent it. So doing things like keeping lids on trash cans when it's windy out there, like let's take some measures to keep it in there and make sure that litter doesn't get on the ground and blow into our waterways, especially when it rains. And then we will also be installing some devices in waterways. Again, this project really is focused on City of New Orleans, Orleans Parish. So installing some devices in our storm drains, over our storm drains and waterways, to capture any litter that does get in there. And so we'll be partnering with Sewage and Water Board and the city to do that, installing what are called litter getters, and they're booms placed across the canals, as well as drain interceptors over about 40 storm drains throughout the city.
I'm sorry, is this augmenting something that's there already, Christy, or is this new?
It's a little bit of both. So we've tried and tested this a few times, kind of pilot projects. We've got a few litter getters installed in some storm drains, storm canals around town. During Mardi Gras, we've tried a few of these litter interceptors just to see, like, if they're effective, if they're going to do the job. And I think with our pilot projects, we've now decided it's worth doing a full push. And so with this funding from NOAA and partnering with Sewage and Water Board, we're going to be working for 3 years now to install devices, do some educational work in schools and with the communities, and see if we can really make a difference, which we are hoping that we definitely will. Because as I mentioned, you know, the millions of tons of not just beads, but litter that gets into our storm drains, it's a problem for us when it does rain. We need those storm drains to function to keep us from flooding.
So if you're going to leave people with one thought, what would it be? Or a couple of thoughts. You can have more than one.
Well, of course, there's a couple. I mean, you know, in the day-to-day course of life, we want to keep litter off the ground and make sure that when it does get windy and rain, that it doesn't end up in our waterways. But also those preventative measures that we can do with things like recycling, keeping trash out of the trash, and ways that we can recycle and find other uses for those materials as well. And then when it comes to Mardi Gras, let's do the things that we can do to make Mardi Gras a bit more sustainable. Beads that end up on the ground, they'll wash down into storm drains and, again, end up in our storm drains and clog them when it rains, which we need to keep them free-flowing. So let's make sure we're collecting those. If we're not going to use those beads, put them in a recycle bin. Or for the crews out there throwing, let's find some more sustainable throws that keep those beads off the ground.
Thank you, Christy. Appreciate it. You do have a happy new year, okay?
Thank you, Tommy. You
Thank
too.
You. You bet. Christy Trail, Executive Director of Pontchartrain Conservancy. And I spent some time in Austin earlier this year, and it's at some of the stores. And it depends on what part of Austin you're in, I guess, depending on the district or council district, however it works. I forgot exactly how it was zoned, but at some places, you got to pay extra for a plastic bag. And I never thought that I would be in favor of that. But when you look at, and look, I'm not a tree hugger or anything else. I do believe in keeping the place clean. But when you look at all the plastic bags that are flying around, and that's going to be there forever. And people are not, if they're not going to be dependable enough to clean up after themselves, and maybe you keep them from getting in the first place. I don't know. How do y'all feel about that? 504-260-1870. I know in some very progressive areas, they have found a way to do away with some of the litter. Hawaii, for example, you got to pay if you get a plastic bag there. I think some places in the UK as well. We'll talk to Billy Nungesser at the Rose Bowl Den, getting ready for the Rose Bowl Parade when we come back. Right now, we pause for traffic on WWL. 826 and a half, live to Pasadena, California, we go to talk to Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, who's getting ready for the Rose Parade. How you doing, Lieutenant Governor?
I'm doing great. I'm out here with our Ag Commissioner, Mike Strain. He's on the air with us, too.
Hey, Mike, how you?
It's cool out here.
Yes, I'm doing well. Thank you. Having a wonderful time here in Pasadena.
I bet you're having a blast with all those flowers, being a Commissioner of Agriculture.
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, we have rice, we have fresh oyster shells, we have flowers. We have all these certified Louisiana products here on display. You know, from Gulf to Gumbo, we're celebrating our seafood industry. Also, I certified Louisiana products and everything in between.
I see a picture of you they sent me of you holding a shrimp. Is that made of flowers?
It is made of this rice on this. This shrimp is made from with rice. And, of course, all over the float, everything is we have rice. And then we will be placing 100,000 roses into this float. And so it is going to be magnificent.
Yeah.
Crushed oyster shells, rice. Flowers.
Everything's got to be covered in a weed, a seed, or some kind of product. You can't have any steel showing. So it takes a lot of work going into this float to get that done in 3 days.
So it's got to be all organic things, Billy, and you're using things from Louisiana. Is that what's going on?
Absolutely. It's the first time they allowed crushed oyster shells to go on a float. But we brought out Louisiana rice, and then we'll have over 100,000 roses, orchids, carnations. Those will start going on today. You have to put those on last minute so they look good for the parade. So in about an hour, we're going to have volunteers from Louisiana showing up. Over 100 Louisianans came out to help us decorate this float over the next couple of days to get it ready for the parade.
And that goes on until 10 o'clock at night.
Louisianians that live in California, guys?
Well, we actually have LSU, Tulane, Grambling, and Southern alumni. But also over 100 Louisianans made the trip out to help us put, so they came out here just to help us decorate the float. And last night, John Foster, who will be performing live during the parade, was at the Rose Stadium to perform for all the volunteers. We had an event last night at the Rose Stadium. So it's pretty special out here. Louisiana kind of steals the show. We found a little old lady in Pasadena from New Orleans. She owns a beignet truck. So this morning from 4 a.m. to 10, we've got hot beignets and cafe au lait for all the people out here decorating the floats.
Are you serious? You really did find a little old lady from Pasadena?
Absolutely. The beignet box. Yeah. That's right. Beignets all day.
That's awesome. Tell me about the smell of where you are. I got to imagine it's just overpowering with the flowers, huh?
It is incredible, isn't it, Billy?
Yeah, you walk into the dent, and there's hundreds of thousands of every kind of flower in the world. They ship in some of them. You can't, I don't even know what they call them. And to see the volunteers working on all the floats, there's about 20 floats in this den that will be worked on at the same time, and people bringing trays and trays of flowers in, telling us where to put the flowers on the float. It's something everybody in Louisiana ought to be on their bucket list to come out here and do one time.
So when it comes to parades, and we're used to Mardi Gras, are people lined up already on the streets or not?
They actually camp out the night before. You know what's incredible? Is there 20 deep camping out. You know, we camp out for Mardi Gras to get a good position to catch throws. Mm-hmm. We've tried every year, but they will not let us throw anything. So this year what we did is we made bandanas with our logo, because there's a lot of dogs on the route. So we give out these bandanas to put around the dogs' necks to promote Louisiana.
You hand them off the float or what?
No,
there's people that are walking.
Beforehand. Yeah.
Awesome. Guys, I hope y'all have a great time. Tell me real quick about the float.
It's a Gulf to Gumbo. It's going to be a shrimp boat on the front, a big pot of gumbo with a pelican stirring it. Hopefully we'll bring home an award this year.
Gem of the ocean. You see the French market. You see the crabs, the shrimp. It's magnificent.
Happy New Year to both of y'all. Both of your friends, I appreciate you. You bet.
Happy New Year, my friend.
You bet. Billy Nungesser and Mike Strain, Lieutenant Governor, Commissioner of Agriculture and Forestry, 831. Time for traffic, news, everything else now on WWL. 844, 16 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Brian Taylor, Director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs. The Maxwell School at Syracuse University, his most recent book is Russian Politics, a very short introduction. Good morning, Brian. How are you? Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Tommy. I'm well. Thank you.
Let's talk about the prospect of it being a Happy New Year in Ukraine, and I guess actually for Russia, too, even though Vladimir Putin, the aggressor, I don't think the people of Russia are necessarily for this. Let's start with that, as a matter of fact.
Well, if we think a Happy New Year for Russia and Ukraine means a peace deal sometime soon, I don't think we're going to have that kind of Happy New Year. I think there's been a lot of discussion in 2025, a lot of back and forth in the media and between Russia and Ukraine and the Europe and the U.S. But honestly, we're not really much closer to any kind of a meaningful deal. And the main reason is because Putin isn't really interested in a deal. He's interested in controlling Ukraine, and that's not on the table right now. Or if it is on the table, not in a way that would allow him to really, you know, get what he wants out of it.
And that's why I was asking, Brian, about the people of Russia. Putin can do what he wants, I guess, in Russia, but is there any reputable polling or is there any indication that the people of Russia are for this conflict in Ukraine? Because a lot of them have been conscripted, right?
Well, we do have a variety of polling data, excuse me, Tommy, that I think shows pretty clearly that most Russians are tired of this war and want it to end. Now, they may want it to end on terms more favorable to Russia than Ukraine wants it to end, but the signs are all that the Russian public is quite tired of this war, the majority of them, and they're also feeling it in their pocketbooks. The Russian economy has not done that well over the last year, and it looks to get worse in the coming year. So if Putin was interested in finding a way to get to a deal, I think the Russian people would welcome that. But as you point out, Russian people really don't have a voice over their political system.
So the whole idea behind Putin invading Ukraine, because it's been a while for people that don't remember, the whole idea behind this was he wasn't trying to stop the spread of this, stop the spread of that. The whole idea of his invading Ukraine was?
He thinks that Ukraine is naturally to be controlled by Russia. He has this view going back, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. It's a mistaken view, but this is his view that, you know, Russians and Ukrainians are basically one people, and the collapse of the Soviet Union was artificial, and he's rectifying this historical wrong and bringing Ukraine back where it should be. So that's his ultimate objective. And if you read the papers, you think it's all about, oh, this little piece of that territory or that little piece of territory. But ultimately, he wants a Ukraine that he considers friendly to Russia, which means putting in place a pro-Russian government. And you might not be surprised to hear that the people of Ukraine are not particularly pro-Russia right now, given that they've been being bombed and attacked for the last 4 years.
What is everyday life like in Ukraine?
So this is speaking only from someone watching this externally. I'm not traveling back and forth to Ukraine, but a big change over the past year is that the number of Russian missile and drone strikes on Ukrainian cities has increased dramatically, which is, you know, notable given that if you read the papers, you think, oh, they're talking about peace, they're coming closer to peace. But every night, hundreds of Russian drones and missiles fly into cities like Kyiv and Odessa and other major Russian cities. So that means people are often living without electricity. They're often living without heat. They're having to hide either in their apartments or bomb shelters. So it's exhausting for the Ukrainian population. Not surprisingly, they're also very interested in peace, but they want a peace that they also consider just and that will provide for their security going forward.
So I'm no Brian Taylor, but it seems to me if Putin's reason for doing this was to get the old gang back together again, and I'm not trying to make light of this situation at all, I don't know how he settles this without losing face, because what we're talking about ultimately here is crafting an agreement. Ukraine doesn't want to give up any land, and rightfully so, because they didn't do anything. They were just sitting there, and they were attacked, as I understand it. Accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. I think the Ukrainians, you know, in principle are willing, well, they've said quite openly that they'll agree to a ceasefire, which I'll remind people was what Trump initially said he was going to accomplish, right? He said right. He was going to end this war in 24 hours, and his first starting point was to get both sides to agree to a ceasefire. The Ukrainians have agreed to that. It's the Russians who said, no, we don't want to stop. So that would be like the first step, which would mean that Ukraine would temporarily not control 20% of its territory, which is how much is occupied by Russia. And the Ukrainian people are willing to live with that if they have some guarantees from the Americans and the Europeans that Russia won't start the war again at a time that Putin feels favorable to him. But as I noted, Putin is not interested in a ceasefire. He wants the war to continue.
So what role let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back, because it seems like whoever can curry the most favor with the president is going to wind up maybe winning here or not, or maybe we'll talk about the role of the president in this, because if Putin's not going to be happy unless he keeps Ukraine or the part that he has already, and Ukraine's not going to be happy unless they get back what Russia has, I don't know what really the president can do here other than missiles or aid. We'll talk more. We come back 8:50, 10 till 9, traffic, WWL. Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Brian Taylor, director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse. Most recent book is Russian Politics, A Very Short Introduction. So I mentioned before the break, what role does President Trump play in this, or what can he do to get either side to agree to, I guess, primarily a ceasefire would be the first step, right?
That would be the first step, one would think, but right now they're trying to come up with a comprehensive peace plan to end the war entirely. And honestly, I don't think that's in the cards. You see a lot of talk back and forth between the Europeans and the Americans and the Ukrainians, but Putin's been pretty quiet about the deal they've been talking about. And I think that's because he doesn't want Trump to conclude that he's the obstacle to peace. But when it finally comes down to brass tacks, he's going to say no to the deal that's on the table because it doesn't give him what he wants.
He being Putin, right?
He being Putin, yeah. It's not going to give him what he wants. So I think the important question is, assuming that is how this plays out, does the U.S. reverse course again and start providing more economic and military assistance to Ukraine? Because one of the things that the Trump administration is doing different than what the Biden administration did is Trump administration said, we're not providing more economic and military assistance to Ukraine. We're willing to sell military equipment to Europe to pass on to Ukraine, but we're not providing it ourselves. So the question is, will they be willing to put harsher sanctions on Russia or provide more military assistance to Ukraine to put some pressure on Putin to end this war?
Tell me about Europe's role in this, their concerns, and why they'd be willing to buy, as silly as it seems, to buy defense weapons from military weapons from the United States and then provide them to Ukraine.
Well, for the Europeans, your Ukrainian security is European security. This is, in some sense, the front line, and the Ukrainians have been doing all the fighting and dying for the last 4 years. But many of the European countries worry that if Putin succeeds in Ukraine, you don't know where he's going to go next. And will it be, you know, one of them? Or even if he doesn't attack one of them, it's going to mean, you know, a Ukraine that's under Russian control means all these European countries are going to have to be increasing their military spending and preparing for a possible war. So it's in their interest, I think most of these governments believe, to help Ukraine with economic and military assistance, which they've been doing from the beginning and doing more than the U.S., I would say, and certainly over the last year. And just last week, the Europeans came to a deal to basically finance most of Ukraine's budget for the coming year, which helps keep Ukraine, you know, in the fight and able to resist the Russian invasion. So Europe's playing a huge role. And the question will be, if these peace agreements that have been going on for our peace discussions that have been going on for the last year don't yield anything, what does the U.S. do? Does it just walk away, or does it, you know, put more pressure on Russia, or does it try and put more pressure on Ukraine, which is, it looked like it might do earlier this year. But at the moment, the Europeans are the ones who are doing most of the economic and military assistance. And the Americans are leading the peace discussions, but so far, you know, no deals on the table, really.
I'm a dumb guy who lucked in a lot of different things in his life, Brian, but it seems to me until Putin is gone, nothing's going to change.
That is a grim view that I think is probably close to accurate. Mm-hmm. The only thing that might change that is if he feels that he has no choice but to, you know, try
Let me ask you about that, about sustainability on either side. Then it would seem as though either the United States and Europe, or the United States through Europe, or just Europe, is in a better position than is Russia to sustain this. Thoughts?
Well, it depends on how much Europe and the U.S. are willing to provide. Certainly, if you take the European economy just on its own, it's far bigger than Russia. But, you know, Russia's been spending 8% of its, you know, size of its economy, its gross domestic product, on this war. Europe spends, you know, 3-4%. So,
but Europe can't back down on this, can they?
I don't think. I mean, the first thing I guess I should note is Europe, of course, is just not one country. It's right. A whole bunch of different countries making their own decisions. But I think the majority of the major European countries think, no, it can't back down on this. It can't let Russia just take Ukraine. So, yeah, that will keep the pressure on Russia. And so far, Russia's been able to withstand the heavy casualties they're taking every year. But one thinks that with more economic and military pressure, you know, Putin might start to run out of assets. But that's probably not going to happen without additional pressure over the next year and maybe two. So I think you're right that we're still looking at continuing this war going through 2026.
Is there a way to craft an exit for Putin with honor out of this, or with dignity somehow, so he can say he won even though he didn't?
I think he could sell many things to the Russian population, and I think he could say, look, we accomplished our...
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Objectives, we taught NATO a lesson. We've got control over this territory, which is historic Russian lands. And the nature of the Russian political system is, you know, he can hold on to power as a dictator, right, just change his message. So if he wanted that out, I think it's there for him. I just don't think he wants that out.
Hard-headed. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time, Brian. Happy New Year. Brian Taylor, director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs, Maxwell School at Syracuse University. Most recent book, Russian Politics, very short introduction. I don't see anything changing as long as Putin's running the show. We'll take a break, come back, spend an hour talking about GLP-1's new pill form and more on WWL. Thank you. Ian 909, we're going to spend an hour talking about weight loss and GLP-1s and some of the changes that are coming to them. And as we get through the holidays and look toward the first of the year, a lot of people start thinking about losing weight. And we thought we'd talk to Mae Scott, our friend Dr. Mae Scott, medical director and owner of Kronos Wellness, to get the latest. How you doing, Doc?
Doing well, Tommy. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Happy New Year to you. A little bit ahead of time. Let's talk about the GLP-1s, and then we'll talk about what's changing and so forth. What is a GLP-1? And because, you know, one in eight adults say they're currently taking one, but for the seven that aren't and or maybe are thinking about it, I don't know how many people are overweight in this country. What is a GLP-1 and what does it do?
Well, when we talk about GLP-1 medications, most people mean the GLP-1 medications like semaglutide, tirzepatide, which are Wegovy. For weight loss, it's going to be Wegovy and Zepbound. Those are the most common brand names. Or like I mentioned before, the medicine itself is semaglutide or tirzepatide. Mm-hmm. These are medicines that bind to a receptor called GLP-1 in the body. And they cause multiple different things to occur. But for weight loss, it is generally going to cause a reaction in the brain where you just stop craving things as much. You kind of lose the food noise, if you will. And your pancreas, which is an organ that produces insulin, it will cause you to produce more insulin as glucose goes up. That insulin then brings the glucose into the cells where it's used for energy, and it balances your glucose levels in your system a lot better. And then in your gut, which is the thing most people are going to notice, it slows your stomach emptying. So you get full faster, and you stay full longer. You just can't eat as much.
How long have these been around?
Well, honestly, for quite a while, for at least a couple of decades. Now, in different forms, there were earlier GLP-1 agonist medications like liraglutide, Trulicity, that have been around for 20-plus years. But the more recent ones that were used, and semaglutide was approved by the FDA for type 2 diabetes in 2017 and has been proven to be very safe.
I guess what amazes me, Doc, is that seemingly these things seem to be like a miracle drug almost in a lot of different ways, but why did it take so long for people, whomever it was, to realize what they could accomplish?
Well, like a lot of other medicines, these medicines were designed and tested mostly for the use of type 2 diabetes. They were not tested for weight loss, but they were secretly used by certain celebrities for weight loss for a long time.
Oh, really?
It just came around to, yeah, the pharmaceutical companies just had to look at these medicines for a possible other reason and go through the great expense and time to have them tested to prove that not only they work, but that they're safe, and then present that to the FDA. And of course, that takes years, many years to do that.
When it comes to somebody, I want to open the text lines here at 504-260-1870. When it comes to adverse effects, are there a lot of adverse effect to these things?
Yes, some people have a difficult time with these medicines. The most common thing that we see is nausea. Most people, not all, but most people are going to get some form of nausea. In some rare people, the nausea can be so bad that they can't tolerate even the lowest doses. But that's not common. We also see constipation, acid reflux. Some people get diarrhea and abdominal cramps. But by far, the majority of people can tolerate the medicine without any problem.
So as of late, it was strictly by injection, but now there's a new pill that's been approved. Tell me about that.
Yes, it's pretty interesting, and it may be a good choice for those people who have a needle phobia. They don't work as well, and they do seem to cause somewhat more side effects overall.
The pill does, but Doc, as opposed to the injectable?
As opposed to the injections, okay. Yes. We can break it down like this. Like the pill is Wegovy pill, so it is a semaglutide. So Wegovy in itself in the studies showed a 12.5 total body weight loss in a one-year period in their studies that they did. So 12.5% total body weight loss in a year. Well, the pill that they've just released, and it's a 25 milligram pill, or they just approved, will show a 16% total body weight loss in 64 weeks. So that's quite a while. You know, it's a more long-term treatment or maintenance treatment.
Some common misconceptions, I guess, or myths about this. I think somebody texted and said, why don't I lose weight on Mounjaro? Well, I don't know what this person is going through, but I can tell you, if you eat a diet of cookies and cake, you're not going to lose weight no matter what you take, right?
Yes. Well, that's sort of true. Okay. It really depends on how an individual responds to these medicines. We have seen, for the most part, 80% of people do extremely well on medicines and will find their goal, 80% easily. There's another 10% that seem to lose weight slower, and those people also will become tolerant to this medicine more rapidly, meaning that they will have to move up to higher and higher doses rapidly, when people who respond really well may not have to move up to higher doses as rapidly and see more benefit. And then there is a good 10% or so that you might as well inject water into. They just don't respond to the medicine. So, unfortunately, there are going to be those people.
What do you look for when a patient comes in and wants to get on one of these things? Is it a percentage of body fat, or is it like prediabetes? How do you diagnose who should and who shouldn't?
Well, we're basically listening to the patient's history, of course, thoroughly going through patient medications, and then talking to them about their potential goals and what they're looking for. Of course, we use the BMI as a scale, as a measurement as well. So we want to find someone who is potentially going to do well and will become healthier with weight loss. It's not the type of person who wants to lose 5 pounds for a wedding or something like that. That's just not always appropriate.
No, I lost 90 on these medications, so I can understand exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. When it comes to people, the differences in the different medications, do they act differently? Do people react differently to them? Are they basically the same? I'm trying to understand what the difference is between.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The two main medicines we're using, semaglutide and tirzepatide. Semaglutide is the same medicine as Ozempic and Wegovy, and tirzepatide is the same medicine in Mounjaro and Zepbound. Now, Wegovy and Zepbound have been approved by the FDA for weight loss. Ozempic and Mounjaro have been approved for type 2 diabetes. I know that can be confusing, but the brand names are just names. They are not medicine names. Mm-hmm. Semaglutide and tirzepatide are the medicine names. So semaglutide has been around for, like I said, since 2017, it was approved for type 2 diabetes. And the newer one, tirzepatide, which is, again, Mounjaro and Zepbound, that medication not only binds to the GLP-1 receptor that we talked about, but also to a secondary receptor, a GIP receptor. So you get more activity with it, And it does cause more weight loss at a faster rate, not twice as fast, but definitely in most people. We also find most people have less nausea with that particular medicine, and they don't seem to become tolerant as rapidly. They don't have to move up on doses as quickly as they do with the semaglutide.
I'm trying to figure out if, you know, I know what happened with me, but I'm trying to figure out with the population if it affects the way your body metabolizes calories or just makes you eat less.
It does a little of both. It makes you eat less. It makes you crave less. And it does help with your metabolism, definitely.
Is there, are there other uses that they found for these things besides just when it comes to eating?
Oh, yes, definitely. I'm sure you've heard a lot of the research that's out. These medicines seem to decrease inflammation. There was a large study that showed that they can decrease the progression of dementia. In one study, they found that people who were on these medications had less heart attacks than the people who weren't. Now, these are diabetics that they're looking at for the most part, but still, on the medicine, everything else the same or not on these medicines. They believe they help heart contractility, meaning that people who have congestive heart failure may get more contraction of their heart, and it could help their heart function better. They found that they can improve kidney function in people who have mild kidney disease. There are just so many benefits. Autoimmune diseases are finding that they have less flare-ups when taking these medicines.
It's quite remarkable. Is it overly dramatic to call this a miracle medicine? I mean, really?
I don't know about a miracle. I think it's an amazing medicine. People who have few side effects on it seem to do extremely well for the most part, most people, as I mentioned. And the benefits that you can get from them are just tremendous. They also, another interesting thing, they seem to decrease the craving for alcohol. So those of us who like a glass or two or three of wine with dinner find that we can easily hold that to a glass, if that.
What about smoking? Have they done any research on that?
I haven't seen the research, and honestly, there aren't any papers that I've seen that have shown that it decreases alcohol consumption, but we've seen so many patients, you know, that are telling us that. And a friend of mine who is a specialist in addiction is working on a study that's showing that it can decrease alcohol cravings as well as other drugs. But I have heard people tell me they have stopped smoking while taking these medicines. So I assume it works that way as well.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Dr. Mae Scott, our friend, medical director, owner of Kronos Wellness, about the GLP-1 medications. If you have any questions, please text them in to 504-260-1870. I know a lot of people want to go and lose some weight after the first of the year, after putting on some holiday poundage. But the difference is, if you went from a normal weight to 10 pounds overweight, then maybe this is not for you. But if you went from being 70 pounds overweight to being 80 pounds overweight, then this is something you might be interested in. 921, Tommy Tucker, back in a flash, WWL. 9:26, no surprise, come the first of the year, everybody wants to lose some weight. You see all the commercials for the, well, for whatever, and gyms and everything else, but these GLP-1s, they helped me lose over 90 pounds, and they have been a real life changer, and I've kept the weight off. That's been the difference, Mace, in that I've lost at different points in my life, like 40 pounds, 40 pounds, 40 pounds, put it right back on. With this, I'm not putting it right back on. But with that being said, once you start taking this, and I don't mean to demean it at all, but if I stop taking this, I'm going to be right back to where I started, am I not?
Well, it depends on the person. And there are some people who do have, you know, issues with eating in their environment, and then some people just naturally.
I don't have issues. I have a subscription, Mace.
Okay. And there, you know, there's that. Yeah. And then there are those people who just, you know, have a predisposition for gaining weight, mm-hmm. as opposed to others who do not as much. So we do find that some people can get on this medicine, back off of it, and change their lifestyle or, you know, start working out and maintain for quite a while. But there are others who go on a maintenance program and seem to do very well with it. And you know, it helps you just regulate your day-to-day life.
The way your body metabolizes, your pancreas metabolizes sugar of whatever form, because I use fructose, and because that's sugar is all that is, right? Or corn sugars. So I forgot exactly the term of it, but you can't exercise it off, correct?
Not in that way. No, not just exercise, eat sugar, exercise, and it burns it off. No, it doesn't.
Because you'd have to exercise. You'd have to exercise 24 hours a day, and even then, depending on how much you took in, you still couldn't get it off. People are texting in. Somebody wants to know about: is there a chemical difference between the injectable and the pill form of this?
No, it's not a chemical difference. It's just the dosing. The studies that they did were on using a 25 milligram pill and a 50 milligram pill. Now they're only going to release the 25 milligram pill. And 25 is a lot for semaglutide because the highest dose in the brand is 2.5. But the thing about the pills is they don't absorb well. When you swallow them, they absorb mostly in your stomach. They don't really absorb in your lower gut or intestines. But you only will take in or only have about 1 to 2% of what you take in as that becomes bioavailable. Bioavailable means that it gets into your system and it can actually function in the way that it's supposed to. So it's only a very small amount that actually makes it through the process, if you will, when you're swallowing it, as opposed to the injections, which the majority of it is bioavailable. It works with an injection.
So I'm confused about what is the advantage other than you just don't have the needle or you don't have to stick yourself?
Well, yes, that's, in my opinion, is the only advantage, that you don't have to inject with a needle. The needles are very teeny. They're insulin needles. You don't feel them really. And you inject once a week. With these tablets, though, you have to take them every day. You cannot miss doses. You have to take it on an empty stomach in the morning. Nothing can be in your stomach in order for it to absorb right. You cannot eat for 30 minutes. And if you miss a dose here and there, the availability, the effectiveness drops tremendously. So I don't know. I don't see the advantage. They are less expensive overall. They're going to start out at the same price as the low doses of semaglutide or the Wegovy. But again, it's just one dose, one size pill, and you just continually take that pill. But you have to be very regimented with it in order for it to actually work.
Somebody texted in, I don't quite understand how all of this works, but brand names as opposed to compounded drugs or availability or price and all of this stuff, it just seems like we have such a problem with obesity in this country that leads to diabetes. I was pre-diabetic. The insurance company would not have paid for it unless I got diabetes. And after I got diabetes, they would pay for it. And I'm laughing because that's so ridiculous, because once you have it, you pretty much have diabetes, right? At least the one type of diabetes. And what I'm trying to say in my own clumsy way is, how affordable are these medicines, and is there anything on the horizon that would make them more affordable?
Well, the prices are dropping. As a matter of fact, as of January, we're going to see a decrease in the brand names. They're still going to be pricey, but at least they're a heck of a lot better. They were $1,000 a month, and they're dropping down to the initial dose of Wegovy is going to drop to $199 a month. But then as the doses go up, they go to $349 a month. I mean, that's still tremendously better than they were. The compound in medicine is significantly cheaper than that. Still, it's going to be cheaper than that, half the price or somewhere around there. And the difference between compounded and brand, just to make it easy, that the compounded medicine is just the same medication. It's just being reconstituted or put it from a powder form into a liquid form by a compounding pharmacy that's making it specifically for the needs of a patient that the doctor tells them this patient needs this medicine. The medicine itself is the same medicine. You keep hearing knockoffs or copycats, and they're not knockoffs or copycats. It's the same exact medication. Now, if you think about it, when I have a headache, I'll ask my wife for some Tylenol. She never gives me Tylenol. I've never had her give me Tylenol. She gives me acetaminophen from CVS or Walgreens. Well, that, to us, that is Tylenol. because Tylenol is a brand name. It is not the name of a medicine. It's a brand name. The name of the medicine is acetaminophen. So when you're talking about Wegovy or Ozempic, Wegovy and Ozempic are trademarked brand names. They are not medication names. The medication name is semaglutide. So it is semaglutide, which is compounded, and that's the medicine you receive from a compounding pharmacy. But when you look at the name of the medication on the brand box of Wegovy, it says semaglutide because that is the same medicine in it. Does that make sense?
It does. So who can compound this stuff, or is it under patent, or how does that work?
Well, that's kind of interesting. Compounding pharmacies in the United States are only allowed to make medications that are different in some way than a commercial medication. In other words, they don't allow them to compete with commercial big pharma pharmacies. So there are some ways that compounding pharmacies can legally make the medicine. If there's a variation or if your physician says that I need compounding medicine for this patient and gives a specific reason that is a justified reason, then they can produce it. Now, Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk, the companies that make Wegovy and Zepbound, have filed a suit against a couple of the larger compounding pharmacies, basically saying that they are infringing on their patent, which is very interesting because they say they're infringing on their patent. In other words, you're making the same medicine that I'm making and I have a patent on it. And then they turn around in another breath and say they're making copycats. They're not making the real medicine. Well, if it's not the real medicine, how are they infringing on their patent?
Right.
Because it is the exact medicine. That's the thing. But the the pharmaceutical companies, Big Pharma, is trying to stop the compounding pharmacies because compounding pharmacies are making it and making a little profit and giving it to patients at a reasonable price, which, you know, Big Pharma can't do because they spend millions on advertising and millions making the product. So, you know, they have a higher cost.
When it comes to age appropriateness, somebody texted in, is there an age that's too young or too old for these?
Not too old, but semaglutide, which is Wegovy, has been approved for ages as young as 12 years old and up. The tirzepatide, which is the Zepbound, has not yet been approved for 12-year-olds, but, you know, just adults, 18 or
so,
above.
So I'm trying to keep up with the words. Let me take a break. I'll let my eyes deglaze, Mace, because you deal with this all the time. I don't. Dr. Mace Scott, our guest medical director and owner of Kronos Wellness, we're talking about GLP-1s. We're coming up on the first of the year. Everybody's going to want to lose some weight, but I think the thing with these GLP-1s is if you look at diet, that in and of itself is dooming you to fail. You have to look at it as a lifestyle change, and that's what these GLP-1s allow you to do. We'll pick it up there when we come back. 9:35, traffic now, WWL. Hi, 9:42, 18 till 10, spending an hour with our friend Dr. Mace Scott, medical director and owner of Kronos Wellness, about talking about GLP-1s. And Mace, somebody texted in, they thought that, and I seem to remember talking to you about this, about a link with cancer or something with these GLP-1s, or not causing it, but helping to tell me about it.
Improve it, potentially improve.
Right.
You know, there have been a couple of studies. One of them that I read not long ago that showed that young people who have colorectal cancer had a significantly improved survival rate when taking these medicines. And there has been linked to improvement in other cancers as well. So the benefits with these medicines is just astounding. You know, as I told you, Tommy, we have cardiologists that send us patients that do not need to lose weight, but they just want these patients, their patients on this medicine. Mm-hmm. We're seeing this all the time. Patients who are referred from other physicians who tell us, you know, I'd like my patient to be on this medicine. I believe the benefits are tremendous. So, you know, there's very little downside. The potential side effects of the medicine, as we talked about, nausea, constipation, when you're on a continuous dose and have no side effects, then the benefits can be can be tremendous, you know, as we talked about. We do have to worry about one concern, and that's pancreatitis, because these medicines can cause pancreatitis, which is just inflammation in your pancreas. It does not lead to pancreatic cancer, but that is a rare condition. It happened in the studies in less than 2% of people, and it never happened before. 5 months of use and at higher doses. We've already seen well over 10,000 patients on weight loss medicines, and there's only one potential case that we're aware of. So it's very rare. But outside of that, really not much to worry about.
Somebody texted in about energy, and somebody else texted in, and you can address both of these at the same time because maybe they are linked, about exercise and these medicines making you lose muscle.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great question. I usually try to bring this up. Now, the medicines themselves do not affect the muscle mass. I hear the same thing about hair loss or people who have hair thinning. It's not the medicine that affects the muscle or the hair follicle. It's really the lack of appropriate nutrition. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are dieting and you're taking in less food, and if you're not bringing the protein that you need into your body will start breaking down your protein. So we always give people guidelines, suggestions about what they should be eating. And it's not a diet to lose weight. It's a diet to stay healthy. We tell people how much water you should be consuming to keep from being dehydrated, how much protein to keep from having muscle breakdown, muscle wasting, and then the vitamins that you should be supplementing if you're not getting them appropriately. That is so important for people. And that's where a lot of this is missing. And you see all over TikTok and social media, oh, these medicines can cause this or cause that. Most of the time, it is the lack of nutrients, that you're not eating appropriately or healthy for your body. That's what's causing the symptoms.
The most success I've had with this is when I listened to what the medicine told me to do and ate just a healthy diet. And it's got nothing to do with, and I guess the thing, Mace, I wanted to say in talking about going on a diet, having been there and done it so many times, the diet itself is a misnomer because you think, okay, I'm going to do this and then I'm done. Then I go back to eating like I want. And the problem is you do that and you go back and you put the weight right back on, right? So what you're talking mm-hmm. about here is a lifestyle change. If you're going to lose weight and keep it off, you have to do a change in your lifestyle. And that is really what these medicines facilitate. Am I accurate in that?
Yes, they can definitely help with that. And that's one of the interesting things. When they first came out as weight loss medicines, my staff started coming to me and saying, we need to bring this to our clinic. And Tommy, initially, I was dead against it. Mm-hmm. I said, people are going to think this is a magic bullet. They're going to think I can take these medicines and live the way I want. And I said, that's not what I want to be about. I want our facility to teach people to be healthier. And so I kind of rejected it. My staff started doing these. They were actually getting them from, I hate to say this, but from Canada because the United States is so expensive. And the next thing I know, I see that several of them are losing weight. They're eating healthier food. As I sit in the kitchen with them, I'm like, wow, this is different. And then they're starting to get back into the gym. And they're looking great. They're feeling great. They're smiling more. They're just happier people. And I thought, wow, I think I made a mistake. I think maybe these medicines are going to do something good for people. And in the 3 years we've been doing this, I have just seen amazing changes in people. It's not only your health, because your body becomes healthier, but your mind, you become happier with yourself. Most people become more outgoing, you know, more fulfilled.
Somebody wants to know about the difference between male and female. Any difference in, what do you call it, efficacy?
No, not really. And you don't change the dosing. We do see men tend to lose weight faster. A lot of that can be because of muscle mass, underlying muscle mass, and just the metabolism. So on average, and this is kind of a guesstimate, we'll see women lose about 5 to 10 pounds a month if they're doing everything right. Some more than that, some less than that. And with men, it's more like, you know, 12 up to, 8 to 12 pounds a month. I have had a few men lose as much as 20 pounds a month. Mm. That's really rapid weight loss. But the ones that I've seen do this have done very well. And two that are friends of mine have held it off and done quite well with these medicines.
Somebody else texted in and wants to know about, you know, their lobbies for big pharma, et cetera, et cetera. Is anybody really taking up the gauntlet when it comes to petitioning whomever to bring down the price of these medicines or release, or like you said, I know they have a legal battle going with, well, you can't have both sides. You can't say it's a knockoff and then it's an infringement on a patent. It's got to be one or the other, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is anybody taking up the fight against?
Well, the Trump administration just did that. So these medications were costing $1,000 or more a month. And the Trump administration made a deal with both pharmacies to bring that price down. So as of now, the Wegovy is going to start at $199 a month in the starting doses and then move up to $349 a month. And that's a tremendous drop from where they were. The tirzepatide, which is, Zepbound, is going to drop to $350 a month. And that's for at least the first four doses. And then they start going up, I think, first maybe three doses, then they go to $499 or something. Again, a tremendous drop from where they were. But the compounding medicine remains much less than that still. But you have to keep in mind that the money that Big Pharma spends just producing these medicines, testing the medicines, bringing them to the FDA, and then the commercials, millions and millions of dollars of commercials to try to sell the medicines, that's very expensive. So they have to recoup some money from it.
If somebody wants to pursue this, if they're listening to this and they think this is the kind of thing they might be interested, what's the first step?
For us, then call our clinic, 504-267-4549, and just schedule an appointment for a consultation. It's pretty simple. It only takes about 15 minutes or so. And make sure and bring your medical records, or at least the knowledge of your medical history and medications that you're taking.
Any final thoughts, Mace?
No, I love these products. I've been very impressed. I see very little downfall, and I think it has done a lot of good for people.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time and your efforts as always. Dr. Mace Scott, Medical Director, owner of Kronos Wellness. It is 9:51, 9 till 10. Quick break, then we'll find out what's coming up today here on WWL.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.